on a tirav on a charting. Jamuna tira vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotarasatta Sri Sri Madhavai Charanaravinda Bhakti Vedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Sri Srimad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada Thakur Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. So, we're reading today, chapter 21, Conversation Between Manu and Kardama, text 12. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So here we have Lord Vishnu appearing to Kardama Muni. This happens a few times in the Bhagavatam. Lord Vishnu appearing, somebody's in trouble, they need some help, they have a request. Lord Vishnu appears, and it's always, there's always a description what he looks like. Everyone's so happy to see him. How many times has this happened already? We're in the third canto, chapter 21. Anyone, has he appeared before? Let's see, Brahma has described Vaikuntha when the devotees are asking, what's wrong? Why is the world so dark? What's going on? Brahma says, well, and then he tells this whole story about Vaikuntha and how beautiful it is. He goes off on a long tangent about how beautiful Vaikuntha is. Then he tells the story of the four Kumaras cursing the gatekeepers. Throughout the Bhagavatam, someone's in trouble. Lord Vishnu appears, and I was thinking, it's always really brief. They see him, He solves the problem, they offer prayers, and then he's gone. Later on in the eighth canto, he's actually taking part in the battles. He's coming in, he's throwing his chakra, he's fighting Kalanemi and other demons, so they get to see him a little bit longer. But it's always really brief. No one ever gets to sit down and eat with Vishnu or make a joke with him. I mean, it's always just, there he is, wow. And it's always really good. No one's ever disappointed by seeing Vishnu. In our reading group, we're in the 10th canto now, and so that's like a big deal. Like, even the demigods are confused. Like, is this the same person? These people are sitting with him on the floor, and he's eating. They're sharing meals with him. They're joking with him. They're wrestling with him. Is this the same person? And who are these people that get to be so close with Vishnu? So I just wanted to bring that up before I forget. That was something I was thinking about this morning. Who are these people that get to spend so much time? So anyway, here at Kardama, it's like this whole purport is about the perfection of the yoga system, all the work it takes to get to see Lord Vishnu, and what a amazing achievement it is. And it's just a glimpse. It's just a brief moment. He sees him. All right, so here we go. Jata Harsho means, Harsha means happy. So he's very happy. Naturally jubilant, apatat, he fell down, murdna, with his head, kshito, on the ground. So we'll read the sound. I just like to know what I'm reciting. Here we go. Jata harsha patan murdna. Kshitau labdha manorata. So kshitau means on the ground. His head was on the ground. Labdha means having been achieved. Manorata, his desire. Manorata. We use that word in other places. Manorata. Anyone recognize what rata means? Chariot, yes. And mana? The mind. So the mind's the chariot of the mind. So here that's translated as his desire. So we could think of that. Our desires are a chariot. They take us places. Sometimes we get those things. Sometimes not. So here, his chariot of his mind has taken him to, it was so strong that his chariot brought Vishnu to him. So those first two lines again, jata harsha patan mudna, kshitau labdha manorata. So he's finally got what he's desired. He's so happy. Jato harsha, he's naturally jubilant. And murdna, his head, is on the ground offering obeisances. And then the next two lines. Girbhistva byagranat priti. So girbhi is translated as with prayers. Abhyagranat. He satisfied. And then priti, priti svabhava atma, whose heart is by nature always full of love. Kritanjali, who knows what kritanjali means? Yes, Rigatnika knows, when your hands are like this, kritanjali. Kritanjali, that would be a good name for someone. I was also thinking, Priti Svabhavatma, whose heart is by nature always full of love. Priti Svabhavatma. That'd be a lot to say, what's your name? Priti Svabhavatma. Okay, so Girbhis, he's offering prayers. tvabhyagrinat priti, and he satisfies, I guess he's satisfying the Lord, or he's satisfied. He was greatly satisfied because his transcendental desire was fulfilled, is the way the translation is. With folded hands, he satisfied the Lord with prayers. So that's what's going on with that one. Girbis. Girbis tvabhyagrinat priti. Svabhavatma kritanjali. So we'll go into the translation here. When Kardama Muni actually realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person, he was greatly satisfied because his transcendental desire was fulfilled. He fell on the ground with his head bowed to offer obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord. His heart naturally full of love of God, with folded hands, he satisfied the Lord with prayers. Okay, purport. We went through part of the purport yesterday. I'm just going to go over it again. Let's see, Sri Ram, now Ram Govinda. He mentioned a few things. He talked about how this chapter is introducing the family of Manu and how they expanded and how so many devotees were created in that family. He also talked about engaging in the practice of yoga with, he didn't use the word sankalpa, but with that intention to bring about the Lord and to carry out the instructions that had been given to him, find a wife, have children, populate the universe with good people. And Ram Govinda said, I was considering my intentions when I do my meditation, chanting japa. My main intention is, anyone remember what he said? Just to finish, yeah. Just to get them done. And he was saying, I should do better. Remember being at a japa seminar with Satchinandan Swami, and he was saying, the main purpose of chanting japa is to get them done. He just kind of did it like he does as a joke. And I said, no, wait a minute, that's not right. So what is the main purpose for chanting our japa? So yeah, there is something to just getting them done, fulfilling your requirement. And that is part of what this purport is about. We have requirements. We have a checklist. All right, check those things, get those things done every day. But then gradually we come to the point, and Prabhupada introduces some terminology here that he doesn't use anywhere else. Sampragyata and asampragyata. Has anyone ever heard those terms before? You have. Samadhi, yeah. Yeah, from the Yoga Sutras. Okay, you've studied the Yoga Sutras? Okay, so you've done some study on that. Yeah, it's from the Yoga Sutras. I don't remember any other purports where Prabhupada uses those terms. Perhaps they're there, but it's not a common theme. He'll talk about those things, but he'll use different terminology. And so, yeah, you're probably going to know more about this than me, but anyway, you can correct me. All right, yeah, let's just jump into the purport. We did. Yes. I'll say the translation again, though. Just, here we go. When Kardama Muni actually realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person, he was greatly satisfied because his transcendental desire was fulfilled. he fell on the ground with his head bowed to offer obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord, his heart naturally full of love of God. With folded hands, he satisfied the Lord with prayers. Purport: the realization of the personal form of the Lord is the highest perfectional stage of yoga. In the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where yoga practice is described, this realization of the personal form of the Lord is called the perfection of yoga. After practicing the sitting postures and other regulative principles of yoga, one finally reaches the stage of samadhi, absorption in the Supreme. In the samadhi stage, one can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his partial form as Paramatma, or as he is. Samadhi is described in authoritative yoga scriptures, such as the Patanjali Sutras, to be a transcendental pleasure. The yoga system described in the books of Patanjali is authoritative, and the modern so-called yogis who have manufactured their own ways, not consulting the authorities, are simply ludicrous. Okay, what does ludicrous mean? Anyone? Ridiculous. Okay. There's a Sanskrit word that sounds really similar, and it's used by Rupa Goswami describing bhakti. Moksha lagutakrit. So lagutakrit means, like, it makes moksha look insignificant. Lagutakrit, ludicrous, they're real similar. At least to me they sound. Okay, lagutakrit, they're just light. Lagu means light, lagutakrit. So it makes it light. The Patanjali yoga system is called Ashtanga yoga. Sometimes impersonalists pollute the Patanjali yoga system because they are monists. Patanjali describes that the soul is transcendentally pleased when he meets the supersoul and sees him. If the existence of the supersoul and the individual is admitted, then the impersonal theory of monism is nullified. Therefore, some impersonalists and void philosophers twist the Patanjali system in their own way and pollute the whole yoga process. There's so much packed into that one paragraph. We could spend several days unpacking that. Okay, modern yoga. Simply ludicrous. The impersonalists have taken the Patanjali yoga system and twisted it to support their theory of monism. Prabhupada's going to great effort to explain how. No, Patanjali says, when we meet the Paramatma, we feel transcendentally pleased. If the existence of the supersoul and the individual soul is admitted, then the impersonal theory of monism is nullified. So how could we be pleased by meeting the Paramatma if we are the same person and there is transcendental pleasure, which is eternal, and sat-chit ananda? How can that go on eternally if we become the same person? Prabhupada brings that up. Whenever someone realizes God in the Bhagavatam, when they see God, they don't become him. So here Kardama Muni is seeing the Supreme Lord. He's achieving this high stage of samadhi. He doesn't become the Lord. He's still Kardama Muni, and he's still carrying on his love. He's finding his happiness. So all of this is being supported by the Yoga Sutras, and Prabhupada's taking another opportunity to poke at the monists. This is his something something that he enjoys. He enjoys doing it. All right, so now going into the next paragraph. According to Patanjali, when one becomes free from all material desires, he attains his real transcendental situation, and realization of that stage is called spiritual power. Okay, I was wondering what he's talking about, spiritual power. And later on in the purport, he uses the phrase chit shakti. So I believe that's what he's talking about, is spiritual power. According to Patanjali, when one becomes free from all material desires, he attains his real transcendental situation, and realization of that stage is called spiritual power. In material activities, a person engages in the modes of material nature. The aspirations of such people are, one, to be religious, two, to be economically enriched, three, to be able to gratify the senses, and at last, four, to become one with the Supreme. Okay, who could recite those four things in Sanskrit? Let's see what kind of... Okay, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Thank you. In material activities, a person engages in the modes of material nature. The aspirations of such people are dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So these are still under the influence of the modes of nature. Interesting. Bhagavatam is above these four things. Even moksha, we're like not into that. Bhagavatam starts off saying, this book is not about these four things. Kaitava dharma, cheating. Cheating means you get something and you feel unfulfilled. I've worked so hard to get something and I'm still not fulfilled by it. The reason he's bringing up material desires, according to Patanjali, when one becomes free from all material desires, he attains his real transcendental situation. So when we become free from material desires, it's not that we lose all desires, we have spiritual desires. And here we've read about the manoratha, the spiritual desire of Kardama Muni. And when he achieved that, he was naturally very happy, offered prayers, touched his head to the ground. Okay. A lot of technical stuff. I'm going to get through this and try to get to something a little easier to hold on to. According to the monists, when a yogi becomes one with the Supreme and loses his individual existence, he attains the highest stage called Kaivalya. But actually, the stage of realization of the personality of Godhead is Kaivalya. The oneness of understanding that the Supreme Lord is fully spiritual, and that in full spiritual realization one can understand what he is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Kaivalya, or in the language of Patanjali, realization of spiritual power. His proposal is that when one is freed from material desires and fixed in spiritual realization of the self and the super-self, that is called chit shakti. In full spiritual realization, there is a perception of spiritual happiness. And that happiness is described in Bhagavad Gita as the supreme happiness, which is beyond the material senses. Anyone know what verse he's referring to here? Take a guess. What chapter do you think it's from? Pick any number from 1 to 18. I'll read the sentence again. In full spiritual realization, there is a perception of spiritual happiness, and that happiness is described in Bhagavad Gita as the supreme happiness, which is beyond the material senses. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nashochati Nakankshati. Oh, good, yeah, that's a good one. Thank you. That'll work. I was thinking of another one, But Brahmabhuta prasannatma na shochati na kankshati samatsardeshu bhuteshu. Yes, so when one achieves the Brahman platform, one is freed from all hankering and lamentation, prasannatma, and becomes very happy. But there's another one that talks about a supreme happiness which is beyond material senses. It's in chapter 6. The stage of trance is called samadhi, whereby one... Let's see, could someone look that up? Do we have a Gita handy? Someone would like to find that one. Chapter 6, I think it starts with yatra. Yatra, chapter 6, the stage of perfection is called trance or samadhi. And in that, there's like three or four verses in a row. And it says, he enjoys himself with spiritual senses, and upon achieving this, he feels there's no greater gain. Once established here, he's never shaken from the truth. So completely satisfied and enjoys himself with transcendental senses. When Prabhupada speaks on this verse, you always hear him, thank you. You always hear him becoming extra enthusiastic. He gets really excited about this verse. Okay, it's 6:20-23. Yatra paramate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra chayvat manatmanam pasyan atmani tushyati sukham atyantikam yatta. This is the one that Prabhupada quotes a lot. Sukham, happiness, atyantikam, unlimited, yattad buddhigrayam atindriyam. So with transcendental senses, you're achieving this really high happiness. And he was saying, our material senses are covered. We're not really tasting things. He says, just like if your tongue is wrapped up in a cloth and you're eating a feast, you're sort of tasting it, but you're not getting the full experience. When you take that cloth off, then you can really taste it. And that's what real happiness is in spiritual life. We are covered up by this material body. And Prabhupada gets real excited talking about this idea. Like, he's excited about it, and he wants us to get excited about it. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Okay, all that's packed in that sentence here. I'll read the sentence again in full. Spiritual realization. There is a perception of spiritual happiness, and that happiness is described in Bhagavad Gita as the supreme happiness, which is beyond the material senses. Trance is described to be of two kinds. Here we go. Sampragyata and asampragyata, or mental speculation and self-realization. Prabhupada defines these terms in really creative ways. Every time it's a surprise. When you understand something about it, when you first read this, it's like, what is he talking about? And then when you go and you study all of the Yoga Sutras, you get some understanding, and then you come back and read this again, and then you recognize Prabhupada's genius in using these words, sampragyata and asampragyata, or mental speculation and self-realization. Well, I'll just keep reading on. He's going to unpack it more. In samadhi or asampragyata, one can realize by his spiritual senses the spiritual form of the Lord. That is the ultimate goal of spiritual realization. According to Patanjali, when one is fixed in constant realization of the Supreme Form of the Lord, one has attained the perfectional stage as attained by Kardama Muni. Unless one attains this stage of perfection beyond the perfection of the preliminaries of the yoga system, there is no ultimate realization. Okay, unless you get there, there's no ultimate realization. Your whole yoga practice, you're just wasting your time unless you get to the ultimate realization. There are 8 perfections in the Ashtanga yoga system. One who has attained them can become lighter than the lightest and greater than the greatest, and he can achieve whatever he likes. But even achieving such material success in yoga is not the perfection or the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is described here. Kardama Muni saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his eternal form. Devotional service begins with the relationship of the individual soul and the Supreme Soul, or Krishna and Krishna's devotees. And when one attains it, there is no question of falling down. Okay, there is something real interesting in that sentence. We're going to have to read it again. And let's see if anyone catches it. Devotional service begins with the relationship of the individual soul and the Supreme Soul. Okay, sambandha and the Supreme Soul, or Krishna and Krishna's devotees. And when one attains it, there is no question of falling down. It seems like he's saying devotional service begins with the relationship of the individual soul and Krishna's devotee. Do you see that in there? That's really how we come in. We meet Krishna's devotees, and that's how it begins. And through the devotees, we come in contact with Krishna. Devotional service begins with the relationship of the individual soul and the Supreme Soul, or Krishna and Krishna's devotees. And when one attains it, there is no question of falling down. So in Bhagavad Gita purport, we were studying chapter 12, the verse, Klesho de kataraste sham avyakta sakta chetasam. Arjuna asks, what's better, to worship you or to worship the unmanifest, all-pervading, supreme? And Krishna says, it's a lot of trouble to try to meditate on the avyakta, the unmanifest, impersonal. Klesho, klesha means trouble. Klesho de kataraste sham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta hi gatir dukam means misery. It's not just, it's troublesome and it's miserable. You go through a lot of misery trying to achieve that realization. And the purport, Prabhupada just very efficiently and slowly and carefully burns up every little bit of idea of let's worship the unmanifest. He just totally burns it. He says it's troublesome from the very beginning. And then he goes on and he says, if an impersonalist meets some devotee by good fortune and takes to devotional service, like we just read in this sentence here, that's the beginning of bhakti. He says these impersonal conceptions will still trouble him, even while he's trying to take up bhakti. So therefore, klesha, from beginning to the end, it's always, always trouble. So he's saying, it's right here. Krishna's saying, don't do it. Why do people do it? How can they read Bhagavad Gita and get that idea? I don't understand. And among the Advaita Vedantists, chapter 12 is their favorite chapter. I don't know how they do it. They're really creative at thinking of ways to get impersonalism from Bhagavad Gita. And a story I heard years ago from Jayapataka Swami. In Mayapur, somebody who was a very staunch monist, Mayavadi. He met the devotees and he said, yeah, this is good. I'm going to join. He became a devotee. He was chanting japa. Some months later, they asked, so how are you doing? And he says, oh, I love it. I love it. I love chanting the Maha Mantra. But what I really love is in between each syllable is this moment of silence. And in that moment of silence, that's where the highest happiness is. So they can't shake it once they've gotten that impersonal conception, klesha. It's just trouble. So Prabhupada's just furiously, tirelessly in every purport. Like, what is this? Kardamu Muni, he's seeing Vishnu. It's a happy scene. And then Prabhupada gives a three long technical paragraphs of purports about Patanjali, Yoga Sutras. He could have just said, this is really a wonderful scene. It's beautiful. Kardamu Muni's getting what he wanted. He gets to see the Lord. What a happy scene. Prabhupada does mention happiness here and there, but he does it to point out flaws in the impersonalists, polluting the Patanjali yoga system through their misunderstandings. Okay, so devotional service begins with the relationship of the individual soul and the Supreme Soul, or Krishna and Krishna's devotees. And when one attains it, there is no question of falling down. If, through the yoga system, one wants to attain the stage of seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, but is attracted instead to attainment of some material power, then he is detoured from proceeding further. Material enjoyment, as encouraged by bogus yogis, has nothing to do with the transcendental realization of spiritual happiness. Real devotees of bhakti yoga accept only the material necessities of life absolutely needed to maintain the body and soul together. They refrain completely from all exaggerated material sense gratification. What an interesting phrase. They refrain completely from all exaggerated material sense gratification. What's he talking about there? What, anyone have any idea what he means by that in relation to yoga, exaggerated? I'm thinking maybe he's talking about the siddhis. He's talking about becoming greater than the greatest, lighter than the lightest, able to achieve whatever he likes. Exaggerated material sense gratification. They are prepared to undergo all kinds of tribulation, provided they can make progress in the realization of the Personality of Godhead. Okay, Hare Krishna. Finally got through the purport, and I feel like we could go through it like five or six more times to start to understand it. There's a lot packed in there. Prabhupada's genius. He doesn't waste a single word. He says writing these books is like writing a legal document. He wants to make sure each word is very clear. It won't be misconstrued. He even uses like some legal terminology. We say like part and parcel. And, you know, if you look at a legal document, it'll say the same word. It'll say the same thing like in three different words. And Prabhupada does that too sometimes. By realization of the absolute truth, Personality of Godhead, Supreme Lord, he'll say it like three or four times in one sentence, just to make sure we understand what we're talking about. Absolute truth, Personality of Godhead, Supreme Lord, is achieved through the process of bhakti yoga. All right, I was thinking I was going to get into this sampragyata and asampragyata. So that means the stage of samadhi, whereby, let's see, in one stage you're thinking, I am working really hard, I'm thinking of Krishna, But then in asampragyata, you're just thinking of Krishna. You're not forcing yourself to. It has become a natural part of who you are. You're not pushing yourself to. You're already there. Later on in this canto, Kapila is going to be describing the yoga system, and he says, at some point, the mind, which is used like a fishing hook, has already captured the fish, brought it onto your boat. You take that hook out, you don't need it anymore. You've already landed that fish. So we're using the mind, and in the purport, Prabhupada says, yes, you practice bhakti yoga, and at some point, you've pulled that fish into the boat. You've pulled Krishna into your mind, into your heart, and you cannot stop thinking of Krishna. You, just like we have all kinds of thoughts and desires that we wish we didn't have, we don't remember doing any practice, sadhana, to bring those thoughts or desires into our minds, and yet they are with us. And we're trying to push them out, but it doesn't work that way. When you try to push them, you're just giving them more attention. Instead, Prabhupada gives this curious example of having a bottle of ink and dropping a drop of milk in it. And then you drop another drop and another drop and another drop. He says, you keep doing that, eventually all of the ink is going to be washed out of that bottle. Okay, so back in his time, people did have bottles of ink. I may have seen a couple bottles of ink at my grandparents' house from fountain pens, but anyway, you get the idea. You keep dropping little drops of Krishna into your thoughts, and gradually all of the other things are going to be pushed away. That's our strategy. We practice. In the beginning, we have to practice, like what Ram Govinda said yesterday. My intention is just to finish chanting my 16 rounds. Okay, that's a start. We're just going to do that. We'll just keep doing it. Eventually, it's going to build. We have to start somewhere. Prabhupada says, a child learns to walk. At first, he just stands, he's really shaky, takes a step, everyone's excited, falls down. But after a few months, that baby is walking like anything. No one even notices. I wish it was so easy to do bhakti that it just took a few months. But we have been around for a long time. We have a lot of thoughts that need to be purified. He brings this up, brings that up here also. Anyway, I won't get too technical. Jitatmana prashantasya paramatma samahita. That's in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Jitatmana. Jita means to conquer. When your mind is conquered, prashantasya, you become peaceful. Paramatma samahita. And you've achieved the paramatma. This is how the Yoga Sutras begin. Still the mind, and you'll see the Paramatma in your heart. So our strategy is look at Krishna, serve Krishna, and eventually the mind will become peaceful. We're kind of going about it in a different way. And also we try to calm the mind down. We stop activities which disrupt our thoughts. And it's easy and natural. We were just reading a purport where Prabhupada says, yoga system asks us to do unnatural things with our mind. But bhakti yoga is completely natural. Love Krishna, serve Krishna, think of how to serve Krishna. We also read, a purport recently from the 10th canto where Prabhupada talks about samadhi, kriyashu. Meaning, by manual labor or by work is important in this verse. One should engage in practical service to the Lord. In our Krishna consciousness movement, all our activities are concentrated upon distributing Krishna literature. This is very important. One may approach any person and induce him to read Krishna literature so that in the future he may also become a devotee. Such activities are recommended in this verse, Kriyasu Yastvach Charanaravindayo. Such activities will always remind the devotees of the Lord's lotus feet. By fully concentrating on distributing books for Krishna, one is fully absorbed in Krishna. This is samadhi. So when we're focused on serving Krishna, preaching, this is samadhi. Let's see, and that's from chapter 2, Demigod's Prayers to Krishna in the womb. So just by hearing about Krishna, our mind becomes changed. We can try so many technical things to try to disrupt the thought process, but it's just natural. When we hear about Krishna, there's something about it that defies logic and reasoning. My first visit to the temple way back in 1975, devotees were telling me about all of these things, and I thought, okay. I just said, okay, well, it sounds like this is a process. Just this Hare Krishna mantra is a process to still the mind so we become peaceful and we become happy. And they said, no, Krishna is God. Don't you get it? He was 5 years old and he lifted Govardhan Hill for a whole week. And the way the devotee said that with so much conviction, I was like, okay, I get it now. Although I'd never heard of Govardhan Hill before, but just the way he said it, it was like, oh, okay, he's God. That's who Krishna is. That's why we're chanting Hare Krishna. Another story, I was in Chicago giving a class at the Chicago School of Art. It was a big class. There were like 90 students there, and we had served out little cups of chickpea sabji and puris and napkins, and so everyone was sitting at their desk, and it was a colorful presentation with lots of pictures and a presentation of the history of the Hare Krishna movement and the practices that we follow, and everyone was having a great time. And then somebody asked a question. He said, well, you guys are following all of these strictures, but what about Krishna? I heard he had like 100 wives. And immediately everyone they were smiling and they're like, oh no, we like this. Now it sounds like there's some hypocrisy going on here. Here's the main guy, he's doing all of these things. And I was feeling a little tense. And then I said, well, no, I don't know where you heard that, but you're way off. This is completely wrong. And everyone looked really relieved. I said, Krishna didn't have 100 wives. He had 6. And they're all like, teen. 1,000. And then they were all smiling again. And I said, why not? He's God. I mean, who would not want to be married to Krishna? He could have 16 billion wives. He's unlimited. Everybody wants to be married with Krishna. Why should it only be one person? He's unlimited. And then I got to start telling stories. And he built this beautiful town for them. And they each had a beautiful house, not just a house, it was a palace. And then this one saintly person, this yogi, came to visit Krishna to see how he's living. And so these are all art students, they told me. Make it beautiful, make it colorful. As I said, they each palace was decorated so tastefully, artistically. You guys are all artists. This was the epitome of art. There were tapestries, jewelry. He had unlimited budget because he's God. Wouldn't you like to decorate a palace like that? And so this yogi person was going. He walked into one palace and Krishna greeted him. Oh, Narada Muni, great saintly person, please sit down. And he gave him a reception, offered him wonderful things to eat, and then Narada just said thank you and smiled and walked off to the next palace where Krishna was sitting with one of his sons on his lap, patting him on the head. And then he went to another palace where he was playing chess with his wife. Went to another palace where he had friends over and they were discussing business. Went to another palace where, anyway, each where he was engaged in a religious ceremony. And so the art students, they're like, oh, okay. So when we do that, this is the power of bhakti, just talking about Krishna. It has that effect on us, on them, on everybody. So this is, Prabhupada says, this is samadhi. Just trying to figure out how to attract other people to Krishna. And all of the other business involved in book publication, translation. Let's see. I had a couple of other things. So, asampragyata. So this idea of asampragyata, of being there, not even knowing that you're there. You're just thinking of Krishna. Just like sometimes we're chanting Hare Krishna, and all of a sudden these thoughts come into our head. We're thinking of something completely mundane. And we wonder, how did I get here? Why am I thinking these things? I wasn't planning on doing that. So the higher, when we become more evolved, it'll be just the other way around. We'll be trying to figure out how to get our, renew our driver's license at the DMV. And then we'll be thinking of Putana and how she was, you know, this and that. And then we'll be going off on some long tangent in our mind, thinking about Krishna and Yashoda. And we'll be wondering, how did I get here? I'm trying to figure out how to, which line I'm supposed to be waiting in to get my driver's license. And speaking of Putana, we read about Putana last night in Prabhupada's purport. There's one sentence which is really curious. It said, Putana was neither a devotee or a non-devotee. She was a demon sent by Kamsa to kill Krishna. So how is she not a non-devotee? But this was the whole puzzle, like how come Krishna gives her this position after killing her? She wasn't a devotee, she wasn't a non-devotee. She was a demon sent by Kamsa. So she's also in this asampragyata. She wasn't doing sadhana to achieve Krishna. She just came upon Krishna. And Krishna is so auspicious. Any mention of Krishna, the name of Krishna, talking about Krishna, what to speak of actually seeing Krishna, is auspicious and always brings about a good result. Just thinking about Krishna, when Shukadeva started telling that story, he first gives this thing, he speaks a verse saying, wherever people are talking about Krishna or thinking of Krishna, there's no possibility of anything inauspicious happening. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, he said that just so Parikshit Maharaj wouldn't worry about the people in Braj with Putana there. So here throughout Bhagavatam, we get a little glimpse of Vishnu. And then, you know, it's all building up to the 10th canto. Here are people who sit with Krishna and share meals. Vasudeva and Devaki, they don't even get to do that with him. He's born and then it's time to go. Devaki does get to nurse him though. He needs to eat before that journey. Somebody was asking, what about those poor six children that were killed by Kamsa? And so she was relieved when we said, Krishna brings them back and they get to sit in the lap of their mother. She gets to nurse each one of them. So they get prasad because that Devaki's milk had been offered to Krishna. And so they all achieve perfection. So it's a happy ending. So we got a few minutes. If there's any discussion, any questions, we covered a lot of ground. I don't know if we really covered it, though. We just ran over it. And oh, here's one more thing about asampragyata. And Prabhupada uses this really interesting example in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in a purport to Madhya chapter 22. One has to learn to use a typewriter by following the regulative principles of the typing book. One has to place his fingers on the keys in such a way and practice. But when one becomes adept, he can type swiftly and correctly without even looking at the keys. Similarly, one has to follow the rules and regulations of devotional service as they are set down by the spiritual master. Then one can come to the point of spontaneous loving service. This love is already there within the heart of everyone. Anybody learn how to type? You know your home keys and... Okay, interesting. In the beginning, it's like you're just typing on those home keys. You're just reading that and... So Prabhupada learned that too. So sadhana bhakti, chanting just to finish your rounds, that's kind of like typing. But eventually it's going to become real. And you get to the point where you just think of a word and your fingers are moving. You're not thinking of moving to the J, U, S, T. I don't even know where those keys are. If I had to just pick it out one at a time, I couldn't find them. But with my fingers there, I know where they are. Okay. Everybody good? Karasha? Okay. The verse again. Here we go. When Kardama Muni actually realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person, he was greatly satisfied because his transcendental desire was fulfilled. He fell on the ground with his head bowed to offer obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord. His heart naturally full of love of God, with folded hands, he satisfied the Lord with prayers. Okay. The stalwarts here. You guys are here every day.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you for your class. It's always so thoughtful. When Prabhupada came out with the Bhagavad Gita and the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada said he couldn't recommend any Bhagavad Gita. So now even in India, you see so many people are becoming devotees because Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita is so clear. It tells you who Krishna is. And look at the way he delineated this yoga system. I mean, you know, it makes it so simple that you can understand that the purpose of life is to serve Krishna. And when you ask who these cowherd boys and girls are playing with Krishna, you can understand that when you get to know Krishna, you want to love him. or vice versa. You love him and you get to want to know him. But it's what else is there to do, you know, when you understand that this is the purpose of human life, and it's so clearly stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Chapter after chapter, Prabhupada explained it so clearly. I mean, just see devotees want to sit here and listen to you.
Yes. Prabhupada's genius, and he wrote that Bhagavad Gita so quickly. He took a little break from Srimad Bhagavatam. He also wrote the teachings of Lord Chaitanya around that time. He just wrote so quickly, and it's genius stuff, how he's put it all together.
Yeah, he is a genius. The way the Bhagavad Gita is presented in narrative and then the philosophy, it makes it so not easy to read, but you want to read it. I mean, I wouldn't say the word easy, but when you read it, you want to see what comes next, what, you know. I sometimes I listen to it while I'm cooking at home, and I thought, I can listen to this all the time. Mm. Of course, when I turn it off, I get into some nonsense. But it's presented in such a way that it's clear what the purpose of life is. You know, so before there was no Bhagavad Gita in India, like Prabhupada said, he couldn't recommend one, so he wrote one. And now lots of people in India who have read Bhagavad Gita so many times are becoming devotees because now they understand this is what it's all about.
Yes. He said there are thousands of translations in English and not a single devotee of Krishna. And now that we've written this...
That's exactly what I was going to say. When I was living in Mayapur, I would distribute books, the Bhagavad Gita there in the courtyard. And when I would, to convince the Indians, you know, they know Bhagavad Gita, they've read. I says, but this Bhagavad Gita, the reason you're seeing me, a Vaideshi, a foreigner, practicing this, it's because of this translation. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And people in India also, they've become so confused. And by the things he's brought up here in this purport, the monists. Yes.
All right. So if you're like in a college explaining that Krishna has 16,000 wives, how do you explain he celebrates all their birthdays?
How do I explain the...
He celebrates all their birthdays. It seems like he'd have to do about 300-400 a day.
Celebrates birthdays of all of his kids?
Just the wives. What to speak of the kids and anniversaries?
Oh.
I was just wondering how you would explain it.
Yes, okay. Thank you for that. They didn't ask about that.
Oh. Sorry. Fortunate.
I'm sure we would have done something. Thank you. All right. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.